You are on the next level. This is The Beautiful Truth on AIDSisOver.com, where the expression is still free.
20 seconds and counting. Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
And you are very welcome to The Beautiful Truth on HIV and AIDS. And this is Fintan Dunn reporting. I'm an independent journalist, and I'm here to bring you, as I say, the beautiful truth on HIV and AIDS. The whole truth and nothing but the truth. We're dedicated to that. And this website is dedicated to the memory of AIDS activist Dave Pascarelli. He's now deceased, and more on him later, but he literally gave his life in order to bring you the information that you're hearing today. Now, of course, it's called AIDS is Over because, as you're well aware, AIDS is over, and that's official from the top of the AIDS establishment. The threat of a global AIDS pandemic is over. But of course, you know that. I know you all know that because, you would have seen it in the media when that story broke back at the beginning of June. There was wall-to-wall coverage in the media, as you probably saw. The Time magazine covered the end of AIDS. Okay, yeah, you probably saw the Newsweek. The following week, Newsweek had a whole edition. You didn't see that either. Well, you must have seen that ABC 2020 show, all about it. That got... No? The PBS special. Look, this is the biggest news in AIDS for 25 years, that the threat which has been hung over our heads for the last 25 years has been lifted, and that AIDS is over. And it's just been, you must have seen the coverage. You must have. And it was everywhere. No? Well, of course, the reason you didn't see the coverage is that it wasn't everywhere. It was nowhere. The biggest news on the biggest health emergency crisis over the last 25 to 30 years was nowhere other than in a handful of mainstream media newspaper reports. Now, what I'd like you to do is to ponder the implications of what I just talked about. The fact that it did come out from the top of the World Health Organization that the threat of a global heterosexual AIDS pandemic is over, and that it virtually died a death in the mainstream media subsequently after it had been reported. In fact, in the coverage of the recently held annual AIDS Jamboree in Mexico, there was not in that media coverage from any media report, and there were extensive reports, there wasn't a single mention of the news that had come out just a few months beforehand that the global heterosexual AIDS pandemic will now not materialize. No mention whatsoever, as if it had never happened. Well, maybe I'm just imagining, but I'm not, of course. Let me quote you from where this information came out first. It came out from The Independent in the United Kingdom. That's a mainstream, widely circulated and well-read, reputable and established newspaper in the United Kingdom, which reported a conversation which their reporter Jeremy Lawrence had with the head of the World Health Organization HIV/AIDS Department, Kevin De Kock. And I'll just quote from that. Its headline, "Threat of World AIDS Pandemic Among Heterosexuals is Over, Report Admits," by Jeremy Lawrence, Sunday the 8th of June 2008. A quarter of a century, he writes, after the outbreak of AIDS, the World Health Organization has accepted that the threat of a global heterosexual pandemic has disappeared. Kevin De Kock, head of the WHO's Department of HIV/AIDS, said there will be no generalized epidemic of AIDS in the heterosexual population outside Africa. Dr. De Kock, an epidemiologist, said that outside sub-Saharan Africa, AIDS was confined to high-risk groups, including men who have sex with men, injecting drug users, and sex workers and their clients. And that report wasn't just in The Independent, it was picked up the same day by Fox News with a story headlined, "World Health Organization Admits Threat of Global AIDS Epidemic is Over." That story was picked up in the National Post within days of it coming out from the United Kingdom in a story headlined The Evolution of AIDS, June the 11th, National Post. And so, at long last, AIDS finally becomes just another disease, that article wrote. On Saturday, at the UN's high-level meeting on AIDS in New York, the World Health Organization's top HIV epidemiologist, Kevin DeCock, confirmed that, ... It was a real story. It is a real story. A huge story. And I'd like you, if you are trying to decide on this issue of HIV/AIDS, and particularly, of course, if you have recently received a so-called HIV positive diagnosis and you're wondering what to do about it, I'd like you to consider the implications of that story being admitted and you haven't heard about it other than those handful reported that, despite the shattering implications of that and no follow-up, folks, and no reporting on that subsequently when the Mexico Jamboree came up. Now that stinks. What it strikes me as, and many others as, is damage limitation and a withdrawal by the AIDS establishment. It was a devastating admission to have to make, and it's very likely, as it says on the banner on the top of AIDSisOver.com, that these people have been conning us all for years, either so inept as to deserve being thrown out of their positions within the World Health Establishment immediately, or so duplicitous that they have lied consistently to us, despite the fact that a 15-20-year campaign has been waged by AIDS activists who were saying this kind of stuff, as is also on the banner of AIDSisOver.com, a quote from Dave Pasquarelli, to whom, as I say, this website is dedicated. A quote for him, and he'd been saying it, and others had been saying it, in the AIDS skeptic activist community for years. And he said in November 2000, non-drug using heterosexuals have a greater chance of being struck by lightning than of contracting AIDS. He was saying that. And what did he get for those kind of comments? He got unequivocally condemned by the AIDS establishment, by mainstream media, who described him as an idiot, a rogue, a loose cannon, a danger to public health, etc., etc., etc. And now here comes the head of the WHO HIV/AIDS department 8 goddamn years later saying exactly the same thing that the AIDS dissidents have been saying all along. So I'd like you to factor that into the denigration of AIDS dissident opinion that has gone on and continues to go on the internet. I'd like you to factor in the fact that he was right when he said that, and these people in the AIDS establishment were 100% totally wrong, and now they've been brought to a point where they've had to admit it. Now, within a week of that report coming out in the London Independent, the Independent were running another story, AIDS Claim Sparks Backlash for WHO, by Jeremy Lawrence, Sunday the 15th of June 2008. The World Health Organization was struggling yesterday to control the global backlash from an admission by one of its most senior directors that the threat of a generalized heterosexual epidemic of AIDS outside Africa may be over. In a statement in response to the interview, the WHO said, AIDS remains the leading infectious disease challenge in global health. To suggest otherwise is irresponsible and misleading. Well, I mean, isn't that wanting it both ways? I mean, with the one hand, you have got a WHO guy who heads up their HIV/AIDS department saying we were wrong or we lied all those years. And on the other hand, you have WHO coming out and saying, oh no, it's still a problem. And this issue isn't going to go away, you know. Just because they have backed off on that, don't get the impression that these people are backing off completely. No way are they doing that. In fact, they're stepping up in the United States in particular and among the black community in the United States. They're stepping up their efforts. The unkind might say they're looking for some new suckers. They need some new customers now that they've had to admit what's been going on. I'd like to turn to a couple of comment articles which appeared in response to that news coming out. And one is from The Guardian in the United Kingdom, from Brendan O'Neill, who wrote on the 12th of June 2008 in an article entitled The Exploitation of AIDS and a subheading, The AIDS Scare Was One of the Most Distorted, Duplicitous and Cynical Public Health Panics of the Last 30 Years. He writes, after 25 years of official scaremongering about Western societies being ravaged by the disease, with salacious tombstone-illustrated government propaganda, warning people to wear a condom or die of ignorance. The head of the World Health Organization's HIV/AIDS department says there's no need for heterosexuals to fret. In other words, wrote Brendan O'Neill, all that hysterical fear-mongering about AIDS spreading among sexed-up Western youth was a pack of lies, he goes on. And it isn't the case that the heterosexual pandemic failed to materialize because officialdom's omnipresent pro-condom propaganda was a success. Let me interject here. It wasn't a success. Take a look at the STD rates, and you'll see that over the duration of the scaremongering about heterosexual AIDS, the STD rates, they just powered right on through. So there was not a generalized social acceptance of the wearing of condoms in the West. And despite that, the heterosexual pandemic did not appear. Going back to Brendan O'Neill in The Guardian, an unholy alliance of old-style prudish conservatives and post-radical, lifestyle-obsessed leftists latched onto AIDS as a disease that might provide them with a sense of moral purpose. Get it? It was their moral purpose which was driving it all. And they ruthlessly, writes Carroll, sought to silence anyone who questioned them. Those who challenged the idea that AIDS would devour sexually promiscuous young people and transform once civilized Western societies into diseased dystopias were denounced as AIDS deniers. Nothing could be allowed to stand in the way of the glorious moral effort to make everyone submit to the sexual and moral conformism of AIDS crusaders. So that's what's been going on. A cult which just took hold, despite the fact that there was no evidence to back it up, just took hold of public policy worldwide, was promulgated and based on lies and or distortions. Now, we're not finished with Dr. Kevin de Cockenbull story yet, and we'll be back to examine some more of the implications of what's just happened in just a moment. And they are severe implications. What this highlights is, and you've got to be aware of that, if you are of an independent mind and you're taking a look at this issue, is that these people have been lying to you and continue to lie to you, and you need to wise up real quick to that, and we need to deal with the implications, because there's a lot of dead people, you know, and many of those people took pharmaceutical drugs based on the advice of these people, toxic pharmaceutical drugs, essentially heavy chemotherapeutic drugs, the sort of stuff that kills you if you go for cancer therapy and they leave you on it too long. An awful lot of people took that, and I don't mean a few, I mean tens of thousands of people took those drugs, and they're dead. They're dead. And they have bereaved family members. They're dead. This is not just a media phenomenon of nice, sexy, scary stories. This is actual dead people and shattered families. So somebody needs to be held to account for that, don't you think? And if you went out in your car and didn't bother tightening the wheel nuts on the wheel you just changed and wiped out some family, well, you'd be charged with criminal negligence. So what do you get if you participate in something that ends up with tens of thousands of people dead? Do you get charged with criminal negligence there, or is that just too big a crime for anybody to be held accountable? I don't think so. But before we come back to Dr. Kevin de Cock, let's take a quick break for music, wherein we celebrate. It's not all doom and gloom, folks, because either way, it's a time to celebrate. It's a time to celebrate because this desperate potential tragedy has, the shadow of it has now been lifted from us. Or because we're finally getting some accountability from an AIDS establishment which has at last been backed into a corner and is on the defensive. Either way, it's a cause for celebration. So let's celebrate by counterpointing the words of a prudish anti-sex alarmist like Dr. Becky Coon with the more relaxed and easygoing lyrics of Depeche Mode and their track Free Love. Because, hey, Depeche Mode probably come from the camp like most of us did before these nutcases, wolf criers and alarmists and anti-sex league. It's reminiscent, isn't it, of the anti-sex league of Orwell's 1984. Before they got going, we used to feel a different way about the beauty of sexual interaction between two normally healthy human beings without all this fear-mongering overshadowing it. Let's counterpoint the two of those views. You are on AIDSisOver.com, and this is The Beautiful Truth About HIV and AIDS with Fintan Dunn reporting. and we'll be right back.
It is vital to practice safer sex with each sexual encounter. If you've been hiding from love, make choices that eliminate sex.
I can understand where you're coming from. I can understand where you're coming from. If you've suffered enough,
that eliminate sex.
If you've suffered enough, I can understand what you're thinking of. I can see the
practice safer sex.
To bring you freedom. Let's make it clear.
Condoms for men and dental dams for women.
That this is freedom. No hidden catch. No strings attached. It is freedom.
Who choose to be sexually active should reduce their risk via condoms for men and dental dams for women.
I've been running like you. I've been running like you. Now you understand why I'm running scared. Now you understand why I'm running scared. And I'm only here
to practice safer sex. Condoms for men and dental dams for women.
This is free love. No hidden catch, no strings attached. Just free love. No hidden
Remember catch, that you can contract HIV from even a single sexual encounter, and it is vital to use condoms. This is Dr. Becky Kuhn. Myth, reality.
You've got to take this moment.
Myth, reality.
Then let it slip away.
It is vital to practice safer sex with each sexual encounter. If you have HIV already and are sexually active, you no longer need to practice safer sex.
We've been running from love. We've been running from love. And we don't know what we're doing here. No, we don't know what we're doing here. We're only here sharing a free love. Let's make it
If you have HIV already and are sexually active, you no longer need to practice safer sex. This is Dr. Becky Kuhn.
And you're very welcome back. This is The Beautiful Truth on AIDSisOver.com with Clinton Dunn reporting. Now, before we go on, let me give you one other commitment in relation to the material that we cover here on AIDSisOver.com. We will not blind you with science. That's very important, because I do remember back when I first encountered this issue way back and began to delve in and read scientific paper after scientific paper after scientific paper from the mainstream and from the alternative view on HIV/AIDS. It was confounding and confusing and dense, and I have a scientific technical background and I had a lot of trouble trying to make my mind up. So I do accept that it's very easy to get blinded with science when you're looking at this issue, but you don't have to be. There is nothing in this issue that is not understandable by the average person of average intelligence. And yes, we do have to go toe to toe. And believe me, there are plenty of people in the alternative AIDS community, plenty of people with the scientific competence to go toe to toe with mainstream AIDS opinions, including a Nobel Prize winner, Carrie Mullis, who do not accept the conventional view on HIV/AIDS and have never accepted deeply qualified people who do now and always have opposed the mainstream view on HIV/AIDS. So we can go toe-to-toe with them on the hard science. But that's not necessarily what you want to get into if you're not a scientist yourself or have a medical background in this field yourself. And so for the vast majority of people, I give you my commitment that we will not blind you with science and we'll present the information in an accessible and understandable way so that you can understand it and communicate it to others. And if we don't, just write into me, Fintan, F-I-N-T-A-N, at aidsisover.com. And let me know, hey, dude, you lost me there when you did that last interview or show. I couldn't, you know, it was above my head. I couldn't follow it. Let me know and I'll make sure it doesn't happen again. But let's get back to this issue of this admission at the top level of the HIV/AIDS establishment that AIDS is over. You see, you'll have seen this sort of thing before in the world of politics. How many times have you seen a little story get leaked to the media, let's say about the closing down of a military base or facility somewhere, an unconfirmed report, it just sort of leaked out, and then immediately afterwards comes this standard denial saying no, the commitment of the United States to the strength of our military forces remains unchanged and firm. And you know well that what's just happened is that they did the old 1-2. With one hand they broke you the bad news and then they reinforced the established stated position a day or so later, but the net effect is that they will have gotten across a certain message, isn't it? This is exactly the game that is being played by Kevin DeCock and the World Health Organization and others. Indeed, within a few days of that admission being made, there was a report in the New Scientist saying that no, this doesn't mean that the threat of AIDS is over. And the logic being used in that report was that, you know, we have to be careful that AIDS can simmer among these high-risk groups. This simmering in these high-risk communities could at any time break out into the general population. No, so we have to remain vigilant. Could at any time break out. For crying out loud, the thing has had 20 years to break out anywhere in the world into the heterosexual community other than in allegedly sub-Saharan Africa. And it hasn't happened, folks. It hasn't happened. So here you have this apologia that, oh, just because we've admitted there isn't a heterosexual AIDS problem doesn't mean we have to forget about the issue of HIV/AIDS. And believe me, they won't, because they intend to milk this thing for as long as they can. Now, there are genuine scientists with committed and methodological and professional approaches doing their best within the constraints of the current paradigm on HIV/AIDS, and I don't wish to demonize those individuals. But there are people in positions of power and responsibility who have exercised their responsibilities in those roles in a criminally negligent way. And we have got to address that. And right up there, top of the list, is Mr. De Cock and Bull Story himself, Dr. Kevin De Cock. As Henry Bauer said, and he's an alternative AIDS activist, on Sunday 15th of June, in an article entitled More De Cock and Bull Stuff and Nonsense, on his blog, he wrote that about Kevin De Cock saying, 10 years ago, a lot of people, he's quoting Kevin De Cock here now, from that independent article, 10 years ago, a lot of people were saying there would be a generalized epidemic in Asia. That doesn't look likely. And writes Henry Bauer, what's comical here is that De Cock and his cohorts at WHO and UNAIDS were themselves this lot of people who were saying there would be a generalized epidemic in Asia. They were the very people who were saying it, and not only, writes Henry Bauer, not only saying it, but strenuously insisting on it, trumpeting it, repeating it incessantly, and brooking no contradiction. Exactly. So for Kevin De Cock to come out and say that, you know, oh, well, a lot of people have been saying, yeah, a lot of people like you. Now, the reason they had to back down on this, the reason they got themselves into this bind, really, it's to do with stuff that happened in 2007, in the second half of 2007 in particular, where they had to back off their AIDS estimates. In other words, the number of people they were estimating were infected with HIV. They had to back off that, most notably in India, where they had to cut their previous pontifications on this issue, cut those numbers in half. They had doubled the number, and they had to revise down by 50%. That landed them in a lot of trouble. And whereas previously they had been looking forward to spreading this alarmist message in India, in China, and in Russia, they backed off that. Realizing that, and there are many others who have been challenging their figures, realizing that maybe they were getting themselves into a position where they could look really bad if the people challenging them began to win out. So better to get in there first and admit and backtrack, and at the same time whitewash it. Like, make the admission and then scrub it and go on as if nothing had happened, which they have done, and they are determined to extract the most out of the remaining markets, shall we say, that they've got left for HIV/AIDS. So while we're on it, let's take a look at Dr. Kevin DeCock. Back in March of 2006, the World Health Organization announced the appointment of Dr. Kevin DeCock as director of their WHO HIV/AIDS department. They wrote, a post to which he has been appointed after serving 6 years as director of the US Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Kenya. Dr. DeCock, they wrote in a press release, has also served, among other posts, as director of the CDC Division of HIV/AIDS Prevention, Surveillance and Epidemiology at Atlanta, USA. Dr. DeCock has served on a number of notable professional committees, including the WHO Strategic and Technical Advisory Group on HIV/AIDS and the WHO Stop TB, TB-HIV Core Group. He's also served on editorial boards and panels for journals including AIDS, The Lancet and the New England Journal of Medicine. This is a guy who has been at the center of the AIDS establishment for years. No wonder it's been difficult for those who challenge the cartel view, I can only call it, on HIV/AIDS. No wonder it's been difficult for them to get their message out. No wonder it's been impossible for them to get their well-researched and well-written scientific articles published in journals such as The Lancet and the New England Journal of Medicine, because this guy has sat on the editorial board of those groups, and this guy has made sure that his mistaken and or deliberate lying about HIV/AIDS has remained the establishment view for all those years. It's worth taking account of one other aspect of this as well. The fact that he has served in these roles for the US Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. That is an outfit which has an ostensible medical face to it, but it is in fact an arm of the US military. The US Centers for Disease Control, the CDC, is a military medical organization, and so it is subject to military command, and it has the kind of rigid top-down hierarchical structure you would expect to find in a military organization. I need hardly point out to you that that's hardly the kind of open-minded, equal level collaborative model that you need for good quality scientific investigation, where everybody has got to be on an equal footing and all it takes is one guy who's got some really good ideas to overthrow the previously accepted view. Now, that does not happen in top-down hierarchical organizations such as the US CDC. And CDC has been at the heart of this issue from the very beginning. Something else that you need to bear in mind is that because this is a military issue and indeed is a national security issue for the United States, it was elevated to that level back at the end of 1999 when it was declared to be a strategic interest issue for the United States. That meant they were concerned about, according to them, large strata of the professional, technical, and managerial classes in countries around the world could be wiped out by this virus, and therefore social chaos might result in those countries, and that might have an influence on US national security, and therefore this is now a national security issue. And indeed, the AIDS medical people ended up sitting in the Situation Room, and this became like a national military issue. Once again, that hardly sounds like an environment for open and even debate, does it? Furthermore, you've got to factor in, because of the heavy US military involvement in this issue through the CDC, that there are certain sociological phenomena you need to take into account in this. Because it's well established from sociological research that when people are in fear, they tend to be more supportive of a militaristic approach to social issues. They tend to vote more conservatively when they are in fear. Now, that would, of course, suit those who are determined to promote and advance the profits and aims and political objectives of the military-industrial complex in the United States. And it leads us to the suspicion, at least, that in fact playing up this fear agenda was and still is at the heart of the motivation for the hysteria about HIV and AIDS. Now let's take a look further at Kevin DeCock, because he's an interesting guy to keep following on. You've read what he said there about the global threat of heterosexual AIDS. And within a couple of weeks of that, he was giving another interview to Der Spiegel in Germany on the 18th of June 2008. And I'm just wondering, having made that admission, is he now being upfront with everybody? Has he come clean with everybody? I don't think he has. Let me just quote you some stuff from that interview with Der Spiegel. Spiegel asked him, in the 1980s, when this virus was new and unknown, there was widespread fear among experts that HIV would sweep throughout the world. Dr. DeCock responded, and thank God that hasn't materialized, at least not in the West. Thank God that hasn't materialized. Are you getting the spin out of that? As if it's an act of God? As if it's just a bit of good luck? There's nothing good luck about this. It's got nothing to do with good luck. It's got to do with hard science and the almost total non-transmissibility of HIV. It's got nothing to do with acts of God or good fortune. His answer there should be, there was widespread fear that it would sweep throughout the world, and he should come in saying, well, that fear was misplaced, and it was misplaced for the following scientific reasons. He's not saying that. He's making out that it's just a piece of luck. Der Spiegel also asked him, how high is the risk of transmitting HIV by means of vaginal intercourse? DeCock responded, most infected people will probably only spread the virus in 1 out of 1,000 intercourses. Well, has this guy learned his lessons or what? No, he hasn't, because he's repeating there propaganda which has been widely debunked. Now, 1 in 1,000 sexual encounters might sound low to you, but in fact, it's a high estimate, way high estimate. The best estimate of the transmissibility in normal circumstances between heterosexual couples engaging in whatever kind of sex they want to engage in is not in 1 out of 1,000 sexual encounters between them, but in 0 out of 10,000 sexual encounters between them. That's the data. In zero, because the best study on this issue was one conducted by Nancy Padian between 1985, 86 and 95, 96, where for 10 years they followed 175 couples where one member had, in inverted commas, the virus and the other person didn't. Okay, so, and they're having sex all the time. And what they found was no transmission. Now they managed to twist that into, oh well, 1 in 1,000, just to come up with something, anything, despite the fact that they found no transmission. How they did that is something else we'll have to get to. And that's been widely critiqued. And if Dr. Kevin DeCock was being honest and really had seen the light and was prepared to come out and tell you, as we are telling you, the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth, he would be putting big question marks on even that figure, which he's quoting as if it had not been challenged. And it has been challenged. And I wonder when we'll get to the point where Dr. DeCock comes back out again and says, you know, some people have been saying that it's a chance of 1 in 1,000, but actually we've found there is no chance. I wonder how long it will take him to get to that. I mean, when do the lies stop on this? Let me quote from that Spiegel article again. He says, in some groups, such as young gay men, infection rates have recently risen again, perhaps because the highly successful treatment options with lifelong antiretroviral therapy have turned AIDS into an apparently less dreadful and more manageable disease. What a pile of total horse manure. He said what there? He said, perhaps because the highly successful treatment options with lifelong antiretroviral therapy. Yet lifelong, how long of a life? He knows, as well as I know, and I now hope you know, and many people in the AIDS establishment and among the dissident community and in the medical profession and in the media know that right now more people are dying because of the drugs they're given to counteract this disease than die from the opportunistic infections, as they're called, known to be associated with a HIV positive determination. more people die from the drugs they give them than from the diseases allegedly caused by the virus. Now, I don't know where Dr. de Kock comes from, but where I come from, that is not a highly successful treatment option. That is a disaster. If you're killing more people with the drugs you're giving than would die anyway, supposedly, from the diseases, that's not highly successful. That's a disaster. You'd actually be better off leaving them alone, wouldn't you? Or perhaps, in fact, as the AIDS dissident community have maintained, you'd be better off forgetting the HIV part of the equation because it's unreliable and just concentrating on treating them in the best holistic manner for the diseases they're manifesting. So to describe the treatment as highly successful is another goddamn lie from Kevin de Kock, who less than 2 weeks after he made that admission to The Independent is still spinning more BS in Der Spiegel. He has not learned his lesson. And if there is anybody who deserves to be prosecuted for criminal culpability, it's Dr. Kevin de Kock. And there are many others, including at the chief executive level within some of the pharmaceutical companies who have foisted this disaster on the world. It's been rubbish from the very beginning, the HIV/AIDS story. And it began at the start of the Reagan era. So there's a political and social dimension to this, folks. But some of the stuff that came out back then, but it's just unbelievable that it arose out of Africans eating monkeys or having sex with monkeys. Let's just look at who are they down to here, because it's illustrative of the social political aspect of this. And that's one reason why we won't blind you with science, because it's not all about science. It's about social issues. It's about politics. It's about money. Let's deal with one aspect of this. Who have they got left then? Okay, they've been backed out of it. So they're withdrawing back from the whole population of the world, heterosexual, homosexual, black, white, green, you name the colour, being at risk for HIV/AIDS. And they're back down to this what they call core risk group. And that really exposes this now for what it is. Let's look at this core risk group. The ones who are still at risk. And they are men who have sex with men, intravenous drug users. In the United States, believe it or not, there's a huge propaganda campaign starting now on the issue of African Americans who have got historically higher rates of, at least allegedly, higher rates of HIV infection. So they're in the core group as well. So that's gay men, intravenous drug users, African Americans in the United States, and Africans. You know, the people that those African Americans are descended from. Once again, I appeal to you as an independent-minded person. Have those groups got anything in common besides their supposed risk for HIV and AIDS? Well, a certain cohort of gay men behave in a very, very irresponsible way from a lifestyle perspective. I'm talking about the number of sexual partners they have, and this is nothing... Don't let anybody try and mischaracterize this as homophobic. This is goddamn reality. The reality is, unless you noticed, that men have a slightly different attitude to sex than women. If you've been on up the planet for a while above the age of puberty, you know this, don't you? Men have a gimme now attitude, and women have a hey, I'm looking at this slightly more long-term attitude. So when you get a bunch of men together who fancy the knickers off each other, you can tell what's going to happen to a certain cohort of them. And those guys need to look to how they're behaving. Because, you know, the best way to have sex with another human being is for it to be someone that you know and love and are in a permanent relationship with. Hey, that's reality. And if you're combining that kind of sexual behavior, which exposes you to the risk of many sexually transmitted diseases, forget about the HIV/AIDS issue, sexually transmitted diseases and the treatments for some of those diseases may lower your immunity to the point where you will be indistinguishable from somebody who has HIV/AIDS, remember? If you're doing that and you're also doing drugs, which is a not uncommon phenomenon, boy, are you in trouble. So that's risk group number one. Fast lane lifestyle, some of them. Not all of them, and I applaud any societal attempt to give societal respect to long-term homosexual or lesbian relationships, because that would be good. But there's one group, and they have, some of them, this fast lane lifestyle with drugs going with it and lots of sex with lots of partners. That is risky. Forget about the HIV AIDS. Let's take a look at the next risk group, which is the intravenous drug users. You don't need HIV to die from being an intravenous drug user, believe me. You just need to keep shooting that junk up your arm until it kills you. So you don't need a virus there. Let's move on to the next group. African Americans in the United States. Oh, I've got to leave this for a minute because I'm going to come back to that issue in Bill Clinton. And Africans who were the progenitors of those African Americans. Something you'll notice about all those groups, besides the fact that the African Americans in the United States, their health is not good, folks. That's because they don't get a square deal. They'll tell you. And Africans, hey, they're not getting a square deal either. They're not even getting a square meal. And that is bound to land you with problems. Problems with your immune system. Because you take a look at the thymus of somebody who isn't getting a square meal every day, and you find that it's 40%, 30%, 20% of the size it should be. See, all of those groups, their health is compromised anyway, regardless of HIV status, regardless of the HIV issue. And there's something else about them as well. None of them are on the invite to my daughter's wedding list of your average dyed-in-the-wool, hard-right, good old boy, right-wing Republican. Now are they? And the HIV/AIDS issue came into the public domain with the ascendancy of Reagan and that very hard-right Republican sentiment. I don't mind if you're an old-style Republican, by the way. I'm an equal opportunity person when it comes to politics. Hey, because there's a lot to be celebrated about old-style Republican and this emphasis on small government, because an emphasis on small government would not have landed us in this mess where we have this whole cohort of people being paid through taxes to feed us a line of bullshit, which they then have to come out years later and admit was totally wrong. So, hey, there's a lot to be celebrated about real republicanism and not jingoistic scapegoating republicanism. And all of these core risk groups are people that those good old boys don't like. Gays, IV drug users, and African Americans are not top of their list. They don't get the Christmas cards, folks. So there are sociological issues in all of this. Like I say, it started off with, you know, Africans eating monkeys or having sex with monkeys. Because, hey, you know, as any of these racists will tell you, I mean, that's easy to happen. You know, that a black person could have sex with a monkey because it's hard to tell the difference. Yeah, they tell you that. Because another reason is it's dark in the jungle. So you think there isn't enough light to tell. Is that a black guy or is that a monkey? Can't tell. It's too dark. And, you know, if your sexual partner, whatever genus they're from, is going, I mean, listen to that noise. It's very hard to tell if that's a monkey or a human being in sexual ecstasy. See? I'm kidding you not. This was the line that came out, and you know it was, that this came from blacks, monkeys. And now where are we? We're back in black and with blacks and monkeys and gays and IV drug users thrown in again as the core risk group. By the way, the monkeys just wouldn't develop AIDS no matter how many HIV injections they gave them. They all got farmed out to a primate retirement farm in the end, back in 2003. Probably that was because the monkeys in those cages didn't have as much access to crack cocaine or needles to shoot up with. So despite getting the so-called deadly HIV virus, they just couldn't die. But this is the kind of, this monkey rubbish and all the rest of that, like, proto-racist stuff is what came out. I mean, I bet you they were gay monkeys too. The original monkeys who got this virus. The gay monkeys gave it to the straight monkeys, you know, and straight monkeys gave it to the blacks in Africa. And then Dustin Hoffman went over, as I think I've heard Duisberg remark, Dustin Hoffman went over, didn't wear his spacesuit that you saw in that Outbreak movie, and he brought the virus back to the United States. Something like that. Yeah, so it's gay monkeys. Where do they get it from, I wonder? Probably bananas. It's their bent. You noticed? Yeah, way back before HIV started, all bananas were straight. Then it jumped from the bananas into the gay monkeys. And then into the black Africans, then through Dustin Hoffman, it infected the United States. The rest is history. This is the rubbish that has been pawned off on us. It's time for a reality check on HIV/AIDS, folks. And you will get that reality check right here on AIDSisOver.com. We're going to give a reality check to Nancy Padian and the alleged truth-telling site on HIV/AIDS, AIDSTruth.org. AIDS Truth. How ironic. We'll get to that in just a moment. Let's take another break for Dinky Loop and stand down. We're taking over. Yeah, CDC and your militaristic, sexually twisted views on HIV and AIDS. Stand down. We're taking over. This is Dinky Loop. Check them out at dinkyloop.com. This is The Beautiful Truth on HIV and AIDS on AIDSisOver.com with Fintan Dunn reporting. We'll be right back. And you're very welcome back. This is The Beautiful Truth on AIDSisOver.com with Fintan Dunn reporting. I'd like to focus, before we get on to Nancy Padian, on Bill Clinton. Because I did tell you that these people have not given up, despite their admission that they got it wrong on the heterosexual AIDS epidemic globally. They are not giving up, and they are in fact reinforcing and renewing their efforts in their remaining what I call markets for this AIDS paradigm. And at the time of the recent International AIDS Conference in Mexico, there were reports of Bill Clinton and what he had to say about HIV/AIDS. Now, Bill Clinton doesn't say this because he's got such personal convictions on the matter alone. He gets money from the pharmaceutical industry for being associated with their conferences. Get that. Lots of money. And he gets it regularly, year on year, because he's a strong supporter. He's always there for them. But let's just focus on what Bill Clinton said, because I think it really is illustrative of what's going on. And this is Washington Post on the 5th of August, Mexico City. Fresh off a whirlwind tour of AIDS programs across Africa, former President Bill Clinton said Monday that new U.S. figures highlight the need for fresh attention to the disease at home, particularly among African Americans. Get it, folks? You see what's going on here? Back in June, they admit that the global threat's over. Boy, oh boy, by August, they're saying that, hey, they need to pay more attention to it at home, particularly among African Americans. Well, if you can't find suckers abroad, you got to find them at home, eh? Citing data released by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention indicating that U.S. epidemic has been underestimated by 40%. Clinton pledged the resources of his charitable foundation to refocus on domestic AIDS. Right, so within literally weeks of them admitting that they totally screwed it in terms of the global heterosexual AIDS threat, suddenly they're finding that their estimates only in the United States were wrong, and they've had to boost them by 40% and have a whole renewed campaign back at home in the United States. You know what that means? That means that you African Americans are the next suckers being lined up by this industry. That's what it means. And you better watch your asses, because a lot of gay people died and all your people could be next. Because let me go on with what Bill Clinton said. Data from the CDC, they went on, show that 70% of new HIV diagnosis among teenagers and 65% of HIV-infected newborns are black. About half of all AIDS cases in the United States are among African Americans. This is ominous, folks. And the HIV prevalence rate among black men is 3 times the overall rate in the United States, Clinton said. And then the punchline, folks. Clinton added, recent studies suggesting that people who live in Africa and those of African descent, quote, may be more vulnerable genetically to the virus that causes AIDS. And that is a cruel twist of evolutionary fate, he added. It's a cruel twist of evolutionary fate that black Africans and black Americans are more vulnerable to this virus. Just, Bill, like it's a cruel twist of evolutionary fate that they're more exposed to the getting stuck away in jail for years virus. You heard of that virus, Bill? The getting stuck away in jail for years virus is rampant in the African American community, you know. Rampant. Absolutely. You think their AIDS rates are high? Yeah, you want to see their incarceration rates. What kind of twisted racism coming from a white liberal is this? That this is a cruel twist of evolution? It's nothing to do with a cruel twist of evolutionary fate. It's to do with a cruel twist of social attitude and social policy, as any African American will tell you, because they're on the receiving end of this. That's what cruel twisted is. It's nothing to do with genes. It's got to do with the color of your skin, and it's got to do with the social structure in the United States, which is unarguably banging away blacks into fucking jail at an unprecedented rate and has been for years. So I put it to those of you of an independent mind that this whole AIDS thing is racism, and that it's homophobic, it's racist, and it demonizes intravenous drug users. Those are its core markets that they're left with now. And the fact that they've had to drop this pretense of white, middle-class, heterosexual AIDS exposes the core groupings for what they are, the target of an entirely racist, homophobic view, which has come out of the AIDS establishment for years. And they are lining up right now to wreak havoc in the African American community in the United States, because their market has failed in other areas. They're talking about testing everybody in the Bronx, for crying out loud. We have got one doctor who is boasting that she can drive up the testing rates because, you know, they have to give have a discussion with you before you take a HIV test so that you're properly briefed on exactly what it is that you're doing. And that should be a 20-minute consultation with you because of the seriousness of the issue and the potential should you test positive, whatever the hell that means. And we have one doctor boasting that she's rewritten that 20-minute thing so that it will fit into 5 minutes. In fact, she goes on, a well-experienced doctor could deliver it in 3 minutes, and her own personal record is 1 minute. Oh, it's quantity, not quality. And they're going to take that quantity paradigm and shove it, ram it through the African-American community in the United States with devastating consequences. And it's got nothing to do with genetic susceptibility and everything to do with the fact that those at the bottom of the pile are much more likely to suffer adverse health. And also, there are certain characteristics of the actual blood type, the nature of the blood of people of African-American extraction and Africans, which render them more likely to show a positive on a HIV test, whether there is HIV there or not. And that is being used to ram this down their throats, and it will be. So those of you who are African American, had better look out to your brothers and sisters. And anything that we can do to prevent them doing this to the African American community in the United States, like they did to the gay community in the United States, we've got to do it. So let's come back to Nancy Padian. Nancy Padian is the one who conducted that study of 175 couples over 10 years and found that none of them transmitted the virus to their sexual partner. Not one. Not any. None. How's that for heterosexually transmissible AIDS? And yet, despite that, we have this website I mentioned before the break, AIDStruth.org, which purports to bring you the truth on HIV/AIDS. And in that website, there is an article, and you'll get links to all of this stuff in a page that goes with this audio. Just click where it says audio references, below where you clicked for this audio, where we have references to all this stuff. AIDStruth.org has an article from Nancy Padian defending her paper, which showed, if you read it in detail and in full, which I have, that nobody in the 175 couples they followed, none of them transmitted the virus to the other, no matter what kind of sex they had. She's got an article in there on this, and she's defending her paper and saying that her paper nevertheless proves that 1 in 1,000 contacts among couples is likely to transmit the virus. And this is the same stuff that was repeated by Kevin de Kock in his interview with Der Spiegel. And it's been challenged. Nancy knows it's been challenged. And yet this is her response. And she starts, this is HIV heterosexual transmission and the Padian paper myth on AIDStruth.org begins. One of the more egregious myths perpetrated by AIDS denialists, hey, that's me and many others, is that HIV is not heterosexually transmitted. That's the myth we're putting out. Of course, this was written before Kevin de Kock had to back down. How does that look now, Nancy? The heterosexual transmission issue. Oh, a myth, I see. Why, it's an egregious myth that we're perpetrating. And she goes on then to quote many other papers, she says, confirm the findings of her paper. But hey, we're not talking about them, Nancy. We're talking about your paper, not these other studies. So she spends a nice big long paragraph appealing to other evidence rather than dealing with the issue of her own study. And she says that that means, quote, the evidence for sexual transmission is well documented, conclusive. Yeah, sure. Let's get back to your study, Nancy, the one you did of the 175 couples. Okay, she finally addresses that. You know, she's already halfway into the article. She still hasn't dealt with the core issue of her study and what it found. And she says a common practice is to quote out of context a sentence from the abstract of the 1997 paper. Quote, infectivity for HIV through heterosexual transmission is low. It's a common practice for the denialists, in inverted commas, to quote that sentence. No, it's not, Nancy. It's a common practice for them to quote the sentence where you say we observed no seroconversion. In other words, the virus didn't transmit. No, that's the sentence that we commonly quote. Not that it's low, but that it's zero. But hey, a straw man has been erected by Nancy and now she wants to knock it down. Then she says, anyone who takes the trouble to read and understand the paper, we have, Nancy, should appreciate that it reports on a study of behavioral interventions, specifically discordant couples were strongly counseled to use condoms and practice safe sex. That we witness no HIV transmission after the intervention documents the success of the interventions in preventing the sexual transmission of HIV. Get it? She's saying, oh well, I mean, of course the virus wasn't transmitted between these couples. That's because we were so good at counseling them about practicing safe sex and using condoms. That's why, that explains it. And these AIDS denialists are just trying to twist that. Well, that's a lie, Nancy. That's a barefaced lie. 25% of the 175 couples didn't use condoms on a regular basis. She knows that. She conducted the study. 25% of them didn't use condoms. It says in her own study, 47 engaged in unsafe sexual practices. Besides the 25%. The 47, well, yeah. These people were having anal sex, oral sex, vaginal sex. They were having any kind of sex you care to mention. And a large number of them were having that kind of sex without using condoms. She knows that. She knows 25% of the people in this study were not using condoms. They were not successful in persuading the couples to engage in condom use and safe sex. And she knows it. And here she is on AIDSTruth.org, outright lying about what went on in the study. That's the kind of truth you'll get on AIDSTruth.org. Complete, total lie. And she goes on, infectivity was estimated to be 0.0009. 1 in 1,000 was estimated. That's just plucked out of the air, folks. Because the actual study showed zero. But you could hardly print that, could you? In 1997. And said that you just followed all these couples for 10 years and there was no transmission. And they still can't say it. Now, today, that still stands right there, right now, on AIDSTruth.org and is being repeated by Kevin de Kock to Der Spiegel, who is still promulgating that kind of lie. Now, I did say that this website was dedicated to the memory of Dave Pascarelli because he didn't lie. He told the truth and they couldn't shut him up. And he's dead as a result. You see, back in 2002, Dave Pascarelli, he was in ACT UP San Francisco, who were denigrated for what they said. And eventually they couldn't shut him up, just couldn't, because he wouldn't stop, because he knew it was lies, and he's been vindicated in that belief. And he would not stop. He gave his heart, his soul, and his life to it. And eventually what they did was they stuck him in jail as a terrorist. Believe it or not, Dave Pascarelli and Michael Petrelis were jailed in 2002 on terrorism legislation. What kind of terrorism was it? They were making telephone calls to the well-paid people in the HIV/AIDS establishment who were getting good money to push this lying structure on gay people. And they were making phone calls to them, warning them that they better stop because they were killing people. That was the terrorism. But believe it or not, that came under the ambit of terrorism, at least in terms of being able to make a valid charge against them. And for some unknown reason, they were given $1.1 million bail, which clearly they would have a job making. And so they couldn't make the bail. And so both of them were thrown in jail. That's how the system eventually dealt with them. Now, in an interview with Zenger's in 2002, Dave Pascarelli spoke about that and the impact it had on him. He said, "The time in jail is extremely difficult. My health suffered severely. Michael Petrelis experienced it, I experienced it, and I'm still experiencing it. The conditions are simply inhumane. They'd have so many men crowded into a holding pen that had no running water, and you'd be there for hours, and they would open the door and just toss bags of food in, and people would eat them like they were animals." These are the incredible tactics that were deployed against them, he wrote back then. "For the first 2 weeks we were in jail, people came in and pulled us out of bed in the middle of the night on numerous occasions and served papers on us that should have been served to our lawyers. Michael Petrelis at one point was pulled out of a shower and had to stand there and sign for the papers without any clothes on. That kind of methodology was being used to intimidate us even while we were in custody. I think it's tragic that it was allowed to happen. I was frightened. I'm not going to lie about it. They have everything under control when it comes to your freedom and you've no say. You can't complain about it. You just have to be awakened three times in a night to be served papers pulled out of the shower, and that's what happened to us." Of course, within months of getting out of jail, his health never recovered, and sadly he died. Now, this is the very man who was telling you the truth, which the HIV/AIDS establishment has finally owned up to. And what I'd say to you is that not only has the issue of heterosexual AIDS been discovered to be a lie, which it has, but that the rest of the paradigm is built on lies, and that they are, despite having had to row back, they are determined to press ahead, and this time in the United States their target is the African American community, and that has to be stopped, and so has their march in Africa to be stopped, and so has this whole insane business of HIV AIDS to be stopped, because like a vampire we're going to have to drive a stake through the heart of this thing before it stops. So I'd ask those of you who are AIDS activists to redouble your efforts. I'd ask those of you who have an independent cast of mind and who are making your minds up to pay attention to the information we're giving you. You'll get audios and interviews with leading people in the AIDS dissident community, and I hope you'll get a lot of straight information. I'd ask you to take that and try and work with us to redress this situation. And I'd also ask those of you in the journalistic community to get on board this, because we're starting to see the lies. They've had to admit them. So redouble your efforts, please, and do help us in any way that you can. If you have any suggestions to make, etc., do get in contact with me at Fintan, F-I-N-T-A-N, at AIDSisover.com. I'd like to get some justice also as part of this campaign, not just bring this thing to a halt, but we cannot forget all the people who have been harmed by this, and where there is culpability, criminal negligent culpability at the bare minimum. And believe me, the issue of Kevin DeCock is only one, and Nancy Padian. There's two people of whom serious questions should be asked by an appropriate judicial body in terms of what about the 100,000 plus people, easy, who are unnecessarily dead as a result of all this. So I'd ask you to redouble your efforts if you are in the AIDS dissident community, and I'd ask you to join us and help us and support us in getting justice for those who have died. And let's put a stake through the heart of this vampire. It's taken enough lives. Okay, that's about it for this introductory edition on AIDSisover.com. And I will be back very shortly with interviews and some more information. And as I say, hopefully it will be easily accessible and will not blind you with science, and will be very straightforward to understand and to communicate to others. And I do hope you'll join me again very soon for that. But in the meantime, for AIDSisover.com, this has been Fintan Dunn reporting.
Will you always keep me warm? Home is safe and away from home. Keep day from night, and as the day fades, burn a candle bright for me. Will you always keep me warm? Home is safe and away from home. Keep day from night, and as the day fades, burn a candle bright for me. Walking into the sun. Walking into the sun. Walking into the sun. song.